After the smooth separation of Czechoslovakia at the stroke of midnight on the last day of 1992, not only two new countries came into being, but also a border between them. In this week's Czech Books, we ask, how have Czechs and Slovaks got used to the border separating them 20 years after the split? A British journalist decided to find out by traveling the length of the border last summer by bicycle and producing a book on his experiences. David Vaughan finds out more.
The Brussels-based journalist and translator Paul Kay is fascinated by borders and the way that they shift and come and go over the years. What interests him in particular is how people experience the physical reality of being separated from their neighbours, either by force, as in the case of the old Iron Curtain, or by political choice, as happened with Czechoslovakia's Velvet Divorce. So Paul got on his bike and decided to explore the Czech-Slovak border from end to end. I talked to him in Brussels by Skype.
I knew that the 20th anniversary of the separation of Czechoslovakia was coming up, and I wanted to do some kind of project related to it. And a few years ago, I did a similar sort of project where I cycled down the Iron Curtain, and that was for the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, to see how that had changed in the intervening period. And so I thought I might do something similar for the Czech-Slovak border.
And I should probably add that Czechoslovakia, as it was, isn't unknown territory to you. You actually lived in Slovakia just after the split, didn't you?
I did, yeah, and that was a big part of the motivation. Shortly after the split, I moved to Slovakia to work as an English teacher, first of all, and fell in love with the place. Then worked as a journalist, also worked in radio, the Slovak Radio Slovakia International, for a while, and then moved into translation, and I was there for 3.5 years in the end. And it's a long time since I left there, but it's a place that's been close to my heart for a very long time, the whole of the former Czechoslovakia.
At the time when the split first happened, did you visit the border and see it as it was being established?
I did, actually, not in any journalistic sense, but I went to a place called Kasarna in Czech, which is a fascinating place right on the border. It's just on the Slovak side, and it's a ski area and a hiking area. And with a friend that I made in the first few months when I lived in Slovakia, we went to go skiing. Now, all I knew was that it was in Slovakia. And since we were in Slovakia, I thought, well, I probably don't need my passport then. So I left my passport at home in Bratislava. Of course, when we got there, we realized that to get to this place, even though it was on the Slovak side of the border, the only road went through the Czech Republic. And so we got stopped on the border because several months previously, border controls had been introduced for the first time, and we had problems. And it took a lot of persuasion to get the border guards to let us through. We reassured them that we were just going to go in to get to the ski resort that was in Slovakia.
But common sense ruled in the end, and you did get through.
Yes, and so that just brought home how new this situation was. And I suppose it was all part of that process of all sides trying to feel their way towards how they should treat the border.
And in 2004, both the Czech Republic and Slovakia joined the European Union, and they joined the Schengen area. So the border became a very porous one again, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right. In 1993, they had to build all that infrastructure that has to be built between two sovereign countries, so border checkpoints, customs controls, and all the rest of it, which wasn't there before. And so they built that, and yet, just over a decade later, both countries joined the EU and joined the Schengen Agreement, and that swept that all away. So I found that quite interesting, that there was this whole set of infrastructure that was built for a period of only a few years, really. And on this ride that I did along the border at several places, you see these empty, obsolete, big buildings, which are the customs offices and the border checkpoints.
So tell me some more about the journey itself. It goes through some very pretty Central European countryside, doesn't it?
Absolutely beautiful area. And I went in the summer, and it really was an enjoyable trip. And rural and hilly, mountainous. The way I did it was I took a train up from Bratislava to the town of Chadca, which is just on the Slovak side of the border at the far northeastern end of the Czech-Slovak border, so the end that's next to Poland. So I cycled up to the tri-point, the three-country point where Poland and the Czech Republic and Slovakia meet. I took photographs of the little border marker stone there that marks the end of the border or the start of the border, depending on which way you're going.
Just out of interest, did they keep the old stone and just change what was on it?
The border with Poland, yes. So I have a photograph in the book of one of the original Czechoslovak border markers from 1920. And you can still see inscribed in it, etched into the stone, you can see a C and an S for Československo, Czechoslovakia. That's painted over, and on top of that, a letter S has been painted.
Travelling along the border, you met a lot of people on the way, and obviously a key part of what you were interested in doing was seeing how they experienced the 20 years of living with a border in their backyard. Did you have many surprises and interesting or unexpected experiences on the way?
Yes, I met quite a few people who lived on one side of the border, but who worked on the other side of the border. And suddenly, overnight in 1993, they were working in a different country. And so suddenly they became international travelers every day to get to their workplace. A lot of them were given special permits to travel, so it became easier. But still, it must have been quite a strange experience for them. All along the border, I found that people would stress that there are no problems between the people on either side. And they played down the importance of the border to their daily life, even though they had during this period to undergo these border checks.
And did you find that people by and large had just accepted the fact that there was this new border and that they were living in separate countries, or did you note a sense of nostalgia?
Quite a few people on both the Czech and Slovak sides said to me quite strongly, I don't feel Slovak or I don't feel Czech, I feel Czechoslovak. And they still have that sense that they were part of a bigger united country. That may be simply the fact that they live close to the border, and so they have a closer association with the people on the other side of the border. So I don't know whether it's representative of the wider populations throughout the rest of the countries. But quite a few people, yes, were nostalgic about it. On the other hand, there are quite a few people who are happy that the countries are split. There are Slovaks that said, it's good, we've split, we can be independent, have our own country. If we have problems, then we've nobody else to blame. The Czechs say that in the past they would get a cool reception from the Slovaks when they went there. They said that's changed. People are much warmer towards them. So there are a lot of people that welcome the split.
There's an obvious question I should ask you, because you wrote a previous book about what used to be a border, the German-German border between West and East Germany, a border that's gone. Now you've written a book about a border that didn't used to exist. I'd be intrigued to know how you would compare those two experiences of going along the border.
Yes, the German-German border is very different in the sense that I think it cut through an area that had been united politically and culturally for a lot longer. And so it felt like a deeper wound than the current Czech-Slovak border. Virtually every village and town all along that German-German border has some kind of memorial or a museum to either German reunification or to the period when the two sides of Germany were split. So you simply can't get away from it. It's fantastic that the way that they have memorialized that period in their history. Along the Czech-Slovak border, there's less of that.
And I have to ask you about the book itself. I know that you took photographs and there's text as well. So how do the photographs and the text interact?
It's essentially a photographic essay, and then with an introductory text setting out a little bit of the history, the background of the story of the country and the history of the border, and giving a little bit of an introduction to the characters and the places that I met on the route. So it opens with that and then goes into large format photographs showing some of the landscapes, some of the places, some of the features along the border.
And also I noticed quite often the people in the landscape, which I particularly enjoyed, seeing people standing outside the house they live in or the place where they work or by the border.
Yes, I think that's one of the things I enjoy the most about doing this kind of journalistic enterprise is meeting people at random. Since I don't arrange these in advance, I simply do the journey, come across people, say hello, would you like to talk to me? And it leads to very natural style photographs of these people in their environment. And they've almost always got interesting stories. The photographs, then some of them are quite obvious what the scene is showing and they don't need any further explanation. But for some of them, there's a caption underneath explaining perhaps the significance of a particular feature if it isn't obvious.
Given that our listeners can't see the images, could you maybe describe a couple of the pictures which really are very atmospheric?
Yes, there's a fascinating place. Well, there's two places very close to each other, which I think sum up the situation on the border. There's a well-known mountain called Velka Javorina, which is the major focus of activities to do with Czech-Slovak Brotherhood. So every year there's a meeting of Czechs and Slovaks on this mountain. There are all kinds of commemorative plaques and so on, commemorating meetings of Czechs and Slovaks at various points in history from the mid-19th century. And there's one little plaque there which says Czechoslovakia, renewal in 2018, what would be the 100th anniversary of the foundation of Czechoslovakia.
And so it's predicting reunification, in a sense, for the centenary, or is it? Do they mean it metaphorically?
Yes, I think perhaps hoping more than predicting. I didn't find anybody who really seriously thought that the two countries were going to be forming a new state again. Although I know recently there's been a lot closer cooperation at diplomatic level between the Czechs and Slovaks. But I think this is an expression really of those people who still feel that they are one nation. But a couple of kilometers further along the border, deep in the woodland, there is an old radio transmitting tower that was used for military exercises. And again, it's right on the border. And this area is now overgrown by the forest. So you have crumbling buildings that service this big radio tower. And you can still climb up it, even though it's derelict, and go to the top and you get fantastic views over the woodland, the forest and the hills. And the land underneath the tower is owned by Slovakia. It's on Slovak soil, but the tower itself is owned by the Czech Republic. And they haven't agreed among themselves how to organize it so that they can renovate the place and use it for tourism. So you have that place where there's still perhaps a sign of disagreement. And then very close to it, you have that sign of friendship and brotherhood between the two countries.
And how can our listeners get hold of the book?
I've used a system called Blurb. It's blurb.com, B-L-U-R-B. And it's a very good system for publishing photographic books. You download the software from the Blurb website. You create the book yourself using their software on your own computer. And when you've finished, you upload it to this website. And you can then find an audience with it. People can look at it, they can preview it, and if they like, they can buy copies of it.
And so how can our listeners find the book through Blurb?
If they go to the blurb.com website and search on the title, The Velvet Border, which is the title I've given the book, it should come up using their search engine. And my name, Paul Kaye, K-A-Y-E.
So thank you very much.
You're welcome.